As a child, Vanitha Reisner was diagnosed with polio, a disease that would affect every aspect of her life for the rest of her life. That's something she began to recognize very early.
I had just been out of the hospital, and I had been in for a year. And one day, walking a little bit home from school by myself, my parents rented an apartment exactly opposite my school. So I was going to surprise my mom, and these boys came up from behind a rock, and they started throwing stones at me, and they called me a cripple. And that was my first memory of, the world is not safe. I'm not going to be protected.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You can find us online at familylifetoday.com. Growing up with a disability can bring more than just physical challenges. That's something that Vanitha Reisner learned as a child. We'll hear from her today about how God met her in the midst of that challenge. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. I did an interview many years ago, before I came to Family Life, with an author who...
I have done a lot of interviews.
Yeah. This was with an author who had been through significant adversity in his life. And I remember asking him the question, if we could go back to the beginning and I could say, you can have that adversity removed from your life and live a trouble-free or, you know, not trouble-free, but a less troubling life. And he said, no, what I've learned about God, I would not trade for less trouble. And I did not believe him, and I'm still not sure. You know?
I mean, you
meet somebody who's gone through real pain and adversity, and you think, who would choose that? Nobody would choose that.
Yeah, you would opt out of that struggle. And it's a hard question, too. Why does God allow that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, as you asked that question, Bob, I'm thinking, okay, the pain I've gone through in my life with divorced parents, my little brother dying, I initially think I wouldn't trade it.
Really?
I mean, as horrible as it was, it's who I am.
And it's shaped you.
It shaped me into the man I am today.
Well, we have a guest joining us this week who has been through adversity. Vanitha Reisner is joining us. Vanitha, welcome to Family Life Today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And just that smile and joy in your
That's
voice.
That's what I was going to say, Bob. I wouldn't even expect her to be like, hi, I'm here.
It almost betrays what you've lived through in your life, because as you've shared in your new book, which is called Walking Through Fire, you have had a life that's been marked by adversity.
It has. But I would say also to your point, Bob, I feel like my life has been marked by joy, because everything that God has taken away, he's given me so much back in himself.
So you understand why those of us who have not gone through what you've gone through hear you say that and go, you're just putting a spin on this to try to live with the adversity you've dealt with. Do you understand how we would feel that way?
Yeah, I do. And I think before I had gone through all of this, I would look at people's lives that were really hard and think, I couldn't go through this, that. And if I had to, I would be angry at God and I would hate life. And I feel like the harder life has gotten, the more joy God has given me, which sounds
miraculous.
Crazy.
Yes.
Yes.
But I am actually happier than most people I know.
I got to be honest. And we're going to get into your story, because the listener yet doesn't know the suffering you went through. But when I hear you now, I'm like, can't be true.
Yeah.
It can't be that real in terms of your joy. When I read it, and we're going to get there, I was like, okay, I can't wait to meet her, because I don't know if it's possible what she's saying. And I'm looking at you with this smile going,
well,
it's real.
I think we were all curious because we've all read your book. And I think we're all like, wow, she exudes the love of Jesus and joy in her life.
And your adversity wasn't something that came after you'd had 30 years of trouble-free existence. You developed polio in your childhood, right?
Yes, I did.
And I didn't even know there were still people who were contracting polio. You know, we all think polio is one of those things that's gone, that we've eradicated it. But share how that diagnosis came about and what you remember from all of that.
Well, I was actually 3 months old, so I don't remember when it happened. I was in India, and in India, they give the polio vaccine at 6 months. So I was 3 months old. I had 105-degree fever. And so my mom took me to the doctor, and they thought I had typhoid. And so they gave me cortisone, which lowers your fever, but it also lowers your immune system. And so within 24 hours, they think I was probably paralyzed then. And then went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, I think she has polio. And they said, basically, at that point, there's nothing they could do for me. So I was a quadriplegic. I could not move my arms or my legs. And the doctors told my parents they needed to leave India. Because in India, several things. One, their medicine wasn't as advanced as the Western world. But secondly, in India, with a disability, you have a huge disadvantage. I mean, people think you've done something wrong. Your family is cursed. So there are no services for people with disability. There's no accessibility. And they basically said to my parents, if you want anything for her, you're going to have to leave. And so my parents did. My dad was a professor in India, electrical engineering, and they left immediately and went to London. And my dad took a job installing telephones.
Your family went from sort of a plush, aristocratic lifestyle to what?
To close to poverty. Hmm. I mean, my mom said at the time you couldn't take any money out of India, so they went with almost nothing. Hmm. She said they couldn't afford hot water, so they just used the cold water. And slept on a mattress on the floor.
Wow.
So then, Vinitha, what did your life as a little girl turn out to be? What happened?
I had my first surgery in England when I was 2, and then my dad got a job in Canada. So we moved to Canada, and I went to a free hospital called the Shriners Hospital. At the time, it was the Shriners Hospital for crippled children, and kids would live there, basically. And I lived in the Shriners Hospital for years, one time I lived there for a year continuously. I was in a body cast, so I was flat on my back in a ward with about 14 other girls. And I spent, I would say every year I would spend at least 3 months in the hospital. So life for me was this mix of being at home, being with my family, going to quote-unquote normal school, and being in the hospital.
Now, do you remember how your parents dealt with this? Because as we hear your story, this fact goes back to human error.
Yes.
And so it's one thing when it's out of your control, but when you can put a name on a person that is somewhat responsible, that's extremely hard to deal with. So do you remember how your parents or even you dealt with it?
I think my parents dealt with it by their faith in God. Hmm. I didn't have faith in God at that point. I was actually very angry at God, but I think my mom and dad both saw God has done this and God is going to use it. And they didn't know how.
Tell us how they came to faith, because India is not known for people who have faith in God.
That is an amazing story on both sides. Both sides, I would say, in the 1800s had people that were converted. On my dad's side, my great-great-great-grandfather was part of a Hindu Brahmin family. His father was a priest, but they had him educated in a Christian school so they could learn English. And he came to Christ then. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty incredible. Like, his dad was so angry about it. When he came home from school one day, he had all the family jewels on one side of this huge scale, all their money, and the Bible on the other. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to choose. And he picked up the Bible and never saw his family again.
Wow.
Wow. So that's one side. And then the other side was a similar story of actually my great-great-grandfather was a merchant and was in a bazaar looking at things. And somebody gave him the Gospel of John in a tract. And he read it and said, this is truth. Mm-hmm. And came to Christ and had to leave his family because there was so much persecution for becoming a Christian.
So they were believers from childhood.
Yes.
They had grown up in the faith. That foundation gave them something to hang on to when their daughter was misdiagnosed and mistreated.
Yes.
In the hospital. For you, though, I was thinking about, you said you were angry with God. This was really all you'd ever known. This was your normal.
Right.
So when did you start to process, wait, this is my normal, but I'm getting the raw end of the deal here. Not everybody has to suffer like I do.
Well, two different ways. One way, in the hospital, in the ward, there was a TV. And I remember watching TV thinking, this is not my life. Like, I would watch TV and see kids doing things and thinking, I'll never do that. And it almost felt sort of surreal, like I was a kid in a candy store, sort of pressing my face against a window to see things that I would never have. So that was one picture, as well as when I was home, I was really bullied. When I was seven, I learned to walk at seven. And I remember one day walking a little bit home from school by myself. My parents rented an apartment exactly opposite my school. So I was going to surprise my mom. And these kids, boys came up from behind a rock and they started throwing stones at me and they called me a cripple. And I didn't know how to process that. I didn't even know what that exactly meant. I had just been out of the hospital and I had been in for a year. And that was my first memory of the world is not safe. Mm. I'm not going to be protected. And that is when I remember just feeling angry when my parents would talk to me about God. I feel like before that, that just sort of made sense to me. Okay, there's a God. But when I saw that I was really discriminated against, made fun of, and everybody else's life seemed to be really good, that's when I started getting angry.
And were you on crutches throughout your childhood, in a wheelchair? What was it?
So before that, I had braces. I never had crutches because my arms are much weaker than my legs. So I would walk with braces and sort of hold on to the walls or people would help me. My parents would carry me around a lot when I was little. They had this thing that they didn't want me to be in a wheelchair because their goal was always for me to walk. So I did not use a wheelchair. And then after I was seven, I didn't need braces or anything. I could walk. But the time between then was a lot of being carried around, scooting around really on my bottom when we went through our house and not going that many places, and lots of surgeries.
How many surgeries did you have?
I've had 21 operations before I was 13, and since I've had a few as well.
Wow. So I can see how you would have this anger and angst toward God.
I just thought God doesn't care about me. And when people would say that, that God really cares about you, I just thought you have no idea what I've been through. If you did, you wouldn't say that.
Did you have hope for your future?
No. I really didn't even have any vision of what the future could look like for me. I wouldn't say I ever thought about going to college or living a normal life because I felt like I was probably going to be at home with my parents.
Mm. I mean, you spent a year in a cast.
Yes.
Like almost a full body cast.
It was. I was flat on my back.
And it was supposed to help you walk? I mean, what was the thought?
Well, I had a dislocated hip as well as several surgeries at that one time. And so they didn't want me to sit up. And medicine has changed so much because people don't do that anymore. But 50 years ago, they did. And so that was what you did. You just stayed in a cast until they were positive everything had healed and everything was fine. And I think they did some other surgeries in the midst of that because they figured, why don't we just keep operating?
I can't imagine if your daughter, who spent a year in a cast, gets out and is walking home from school and gets bullied as a parent.
Yeah.
I don't care how great my faith is.
What would you do?
There's part of me thinking those kids are going to... They're going to hear from me.
Yeah.
I am so angry. They do not understand, obviously. And my little precious daughter is starting a whole new life, and she gets picked on the way home. I mean, how did they respond?
I did not tell them.
Oh.
I didn't want them to know because I was embarrassed. Mm. I thought I had done something wrong. And I've read that's what happens when people are bullied. They feel like it's their fault. And so I would try to walk straighter because of my limp. I tried to do everything to blend in more and assumed it was something that I had done. So didn't tell my parents about any of the bullying. All through grade school, I was bullied, and I didn't tell anyone.
Do you remember any joy from the first 13, 14 years of your life?
Probably. I'm close to my sister, and our family is really close, so I had joy from that. But didn't really even see myself as part of the rest of the world.
Yeah. I mean, a year in a body cast, I'm just trying to imagine to be immobilized for a year would be a soul-crushing experience.
Yeah.
Oh, I whine. You know, I had back surgery, and I asked Ian, I was the biggest whiner ever.
Yes.
I can't get out. You know, I could walk. I could do anything. before that surgery. But I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, I am the biggest baby.
You know, and I was telling them that he was the biggest baby.
Well, yeah. I am right now, too. So, I mean, I don't know how I did that when I was 7.
You could never say that you're a baby. Yeah. You disqualify. Well, you got a little older.
Yes.
Did life start looking a little more normal in terms of comparing it to other kids?
It did. When I got to high school, I started to kind of reframe, and I made some friends, and I thought, okay, this might be okay. I might be able to have a normal life. And got involved in FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, not because I was an athlete or a Christian, but all the cute guys in my high school went to FCA. So I was all about that.
And I like that. You said you sat in the back row with your friend.
Yes.
And what did you talk about?
We talked about all the cute guys. I mean, that's all we talked about. I don't really remember that they said anything else in FCA besides looking around. And then one day, though, she came back. She went on a retreat, and she said to me, God is real. And I distinctly remember being so angry, thinking, oh, no, she's going to want to pay attention. She's not going to want to talk about the guys. This is going to be awful. And she did want to pay attention, and it was awful. But I remember she just kept talking to me about it. And then one night, I went home, and I just said, God, if you are real, show me. And I really didn't expect an answer. I didn't think that God was listening. So I went to bed and didn't really think much about it. But the next day, I remember getting up and thinking, you know what? If God is real, then maybe I should see what the Bible says. And I opened the Bible and I just was asking God, why? Why did this happen? If you really love me and if you're real, then show me why this happened. And flipped open the Bible to Leviticus and thought, okay, wow, this is exactly what I thought the Bible was about. And then I moved on to some other passages. And then I just asked one more time, God, show me. And I flipped open to John 9. And the passage where the disciples are talking to Jesus and they see a man blind from birth and they ask, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus says, it is not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the work of God could be displayed in his life. And that was the defining moment for me. It felt that God was answering my question, not what had I done, but why of, is there a purpose? And those are very different questions. It wasn't the question I had asked, but it was the answer I needed. There is a purpose. And it felt like God was talking to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about the Bible is God can actually talk to us. And yes. I don't think I had ever seen that or even heard that concept before. So I remember just saying, okay, God, you know me. You heard my question. And you gave me the answer for the purpose of my life that I could glorify you. And I committed my life to Christ then and really had a very different outlook than I had before, where I had no hope because it felt like, what had I done? Why did this happen? What was the meaning? And for God to say, there's meaning and there's purpose, even though you may not know it, knowing there is purpose changes everything.
I remember being a young dad. I think our daughter was about 3 years old. Marianne was pregnant with number two, and we were out walking around the neighborhood with Amy in the stroller. And Marianne and I had this conversation, and this almost sounds terrible to say, but we kind of agreed with one another that if we had the choice between one of the two of us going through suffering or our child going through suffering, I mean, I would feel terrible if Marianne had to go through an experience of suffering, but it's almost like you're a big girl, you can handle this. But a 3-year-old, if your 3-year-old's going through this, your 2-year-old, if you're my 7-year-old in a year in a body cast, I'd be crying out to God and saying, Lord, how can this be your good purpose for her, for us? Was their faith at all shaken by what their daughter was having to go through?
My mom, and this is actually a really kind of amazing story. When I got polio, my mom cried out to God, like, what did I do? Show me if I've been sinning, and this is sort of what you've brought into my life. And God assured her, no, it wasn't. But he used the exact same passage from John 9. It was not this man who sinned or his parents. And so that was the verse my mom really clung to, like, God is going to use her life. But I didn't know that. And the other thing is, my mom said she prayed and prayed and prayed when I got polio. And she had this strange sense that God said, I'm going to make her whole at 16. And so she said she went through my whole childhood thinking I was going to be healed at 16. That was her view. Even though she didn't tell people, she said that was what she believed. But I came to Christ at 16.
And you were healed in a way at 16.
And I gave my testimony. My mom was teaching a Sunday school class, and I gave my testimony. She asked me to, and I had never given it to her. And she started sobbing in the back. And I went over to her afterwards, and I said, why are you crying so much? And she said two things. One, that was the verse that God gave me. And two, I had always thought you'd be whole at 16, and that is exactly what you are.
If God had given you a son or a daughter with polio, with an infirmity, or if you were talking to parents today who have got a child like this, what would you tell them? What's the best thing they can do as they raise a child who's wrestling with, is God good? What about my body? What about my limitations? What's your counsel to them?
I think I would tell them to trust God, because it's a long game. And that they don't need to see their child commit their life to Jesus or to trust that this is good right then. Because I feel when people try to push that on someone when they're not ready, it turns them away from faith. But saying, I don't know why this happened, but I know God's going to use it and God loves you, but this is hard. And I want to sit with you and I want to cry with you and I want to be there for you through every second of it. And I think that's the best thing. I think parents who try to over-spiritualize it, for me, to kids, could turn them against God more than help them. But I think just saying, I do know God is in this and God is with you, is very helpful.
I do know, and I would agree with all of you, that to watch our kids go through pain is one of the greatest sufferings that a parent goes through, because we just mourn and we ache for them, sometimes more than they ache for themselves. Yeah. I've shared this before, but our oldest son has ADD, and as he was going through school, I mean, it was a struggle. And I just would watch him, and this is nothing compared to polio or being having all these surgeries. This is nothing. And yet I watched him struggle. I watched him change a little bit. And so I was mad at God, and I asked those same questions. I don't get it, God. What would be the purpose to this? And sometimes I would say that flippantly, but then I started praying it fervently, saying, God, show me the purpose. I need your wisdom. I need your answer. And I get pretty strong and like, I'm going to fast until I hear from you. Well, I didn't know it would go for days. So it's day 7. And I've said, I'm not going to eat till I hear from you, thinking I would hear from him right away. But on day 7, I was praying again, like, Lord, I just don't see the sense. I need to hear from you. I need your wisdom through people or your word or something to give me hope for him. And I was reading in Exodus, and it's when God had given the instructions to Moses, and Moses was battling with God, saying, I can't speak. I can't free these people. And God's response to Moses was, and this is the first time, I've read this tons of times, but God said to Moses, did I not make the blind? Did I not make the mute? And it stopped me. And I was thinking like, what? Wait, what does that mean? And I felt like in my spirit, God was saying, do you think I'm surprised by what has happened and what your son is going through? Do you not think my hand is in it? And it was the first time I felt like, okay, if you are in this, then I can walk through it. And I will trust you with him, and I will trust your future for him. And I had a freedom and a sense of, okay, Lord. Sometimes I think we give up too early in hearing from God. Mm-hmm. We need to be on our knees and fasting. We need to be in the word. We need to be with people that are counseling us with wise counseling, because God wants to speak to us.
And Vanitha, if this was all you'd ever had to walk through, that's
hard enough.
Yeah, that's a lot. But this was really a foundation for what was ahead for you. In fact, you share about in your book the various trials you've found yourself walking through in your life. It's really a remarkable story. It's called Walking Through Fire, a memoir of loss and redemption. And we are making Vanitha's book available this week to any of our listeners who would like to hear the rest of the story and who can help support the Ministry of Family Life with a donation. Your donations are the lifeblood of this ministry. Your financial support makes everything we do here at Family Life possible. When you donate, you are responsible for hundreds of thousands of people every day receiving practical biblical help and hope, encouragement, support for their marriage, for their family. You make all of that possible through your donations. And if you can help with a donation today, we'd love to send you a copy of Vanitha's book, Walking Through Fire, a memoir of loss and redemption. You can request the book when you make a donation online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY to make your donation by phone. Be sure to ask for your copy of Vanitha's book, Walking Through Fire, when you get in touch with us. Again, donate online at familylifetoday.com or call to donate 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And on behalf of the hundreds of thousands of folks you'll be touching when you make your donation, thank you for your support of the Ministry of Family Life today. We appreciate it. Now, tomorrow we're going to hear about another one of the challenging chapters in your life, Vanitha, when your son Paul, who was 7 weeks old, had to be rushed to the hospital. We'll get details about that tomorrow. Vanitha will be with us again. Hope you can be here as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, with some help today from Bruce Goff, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back tomorrow for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.